Hello there, and welcome to the Racing Post Weekend Tipping Podcast. There is snowfall forecast at the Curragh for the hottest day of the year, and joining me, David Jennings, to preview the Judmont Irish Oaks and the rest of the ITV action is Graham Broadway and Keith Melrose. And fresh from a cracking weekend of tipping last weekend, our betting editor, Keith Melrose, who tipped Royal Fleet, and he was so keen on Tilsit, he convinced me even to back him. So you're coming into the weekend in good form, Keith.
Yeah, it was a nice one last weekend. When you stick your neck out with something like Tilsit, I just thought he was at least a point too big, and it's always nice when those ones come in, isn't it? And Royal Fleet, he'll improve again. He didn't win all that convincingly, but I think he's still got things to learn. I think that's at least a listed horse in the making.
Yeah, and he certainly downed my Dabab, which was a bit of a tale of woe after trading. I think 1.04 in running, I think Dabab traded that. Rodders, what kind of form are you in going into the weekend?
Yeah, great to be back on the podcast, DJ, after a little hiatus.
Delighted to have you.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I've sort of labelled this week as the most depressing week of my life, really, after obviously watching the disastrous penalty shootout on Saturday night, after telling everyone on the last podcast that it was coming home, and Bruce completely picking my argument apart. But hopefully things are going to be looking up again tomorrow, DJ. I'm off to Newmarket, so should be a lovely day there. Forecast for beautiful sunshine. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, well, it almost came home. It kind of knocked at the door, had a look through the window, and then it just went again. So he's almost got there. But we're going to kick off the action, plenty to get through, and we'll try and get through it as quickly as we can. And we're going to kick off at 1:50 at Newbury in front of the ITV cameras. It is the Bet365 Stakes. Of course, it's registered as the Stevenson Stakes. It's a listed race over 1.2 miles. And at the moment, the best price available is 9-2. It's a very open race. 9-2 Darab. It is 9-2 Real World. 5-1 Solid Stone. Moving Time is 6-1. It's 8-1 Stormy Antarctic. 9-1 Blue Cap. 9-1 Felix, and 14-1 Bar. This is tricky, boys. Rodders, as seen as we're so happy to have you back, we're going to let you kick off.
Yeah, I thought this was a devilishly difficult race, DJ. I think the Real World will win if he reproduces the form that he showed at Ascot. But Ascot, mile straight up that straight course there, is a little bit different to a minor court around Newbury, isn't it? I couldn't be sure that he would reproduce that sort of form. Let's be honest, it was an RPR of 113, won by 5 lengths almost, absolutely hosed up. It's almost like 20-odd pound better than he was producing at Maidan earlier in the season. I just a little bit not sure that you can believe what we saw that day. It was almost a bit too good to be true. I still fear him, obviously, because if he is in that form, he'll win. I thought it was a race to swerve from a punting perspective, so I'm going to kick off with a swerve, DJ.
That's all right. That's all right. You can let the first ball go by to the wicketkeeper. That's fine. Keith, tell us about this Darab, okay? Because I was a massive, massive fan of him. I was blown away at Newmarket earlier on in the season when he won. And I don't know what to make of the run in the French Derby. It was a funny sort of run, wasn't it?
It was a bit, and you can write it off a little bit because of how he was drawn in that race. You know, he and basically every other British and Irish trained horse in the race, bar St. Mark's Basilica, got a wide draw, and historically that's death in the Prix de Jockey Club. So, yeah, I'd be quite willing to sort of write that off. And he is a young horse. He's only run 4 times, and he was impressive at Newmarket. That was about as impressive a novice win as you might see, but that's all it is. It's a novice win. I do think this horse is still priced up a little bit on who he is rather than what he's done, because as we know, he's extremely well bred. He's a half-brother to Enable, isn't he? So he still gets a lot of column inches dedicated to him on that basis. I think on form, I'd much, much rather back Real World or Solid Stone, who are roughly the same price or slightly bigger than him. The one I'm erring towards, simply because of the way I think this race might be run, is Solid Stone. Because Real World, as Rodders said, that was the Hunt Cup. That was a straight mile, you know, the go hard, big field handicap. And he was all, even then, he was a little bit on the free side. This has got the potential to be quite a tactical mile two race round the bend, smallish field. And, you know, there's not much in the way of pace in the race, to be quite honest with you. Majestic Dawn might be the only one I can see that would obviously cut out the running. And Solid Stone has led himself, and he's got Richard Kingscott on now, who is a jockey that likes to take the initiative. It's not out of the question Solid Stone leads, and if he doesn't, he will be very close to the front rank. He's got a lot more in the way of forming these small field races, and I think that just gives him the edge. It's not a particularly massive view, but I do want to take on Zarab, and I do think conditions just lend themselves a little bit better to Solid Stone running a big race than Real World.
Okay, doke. So it's Solid Stone for Keith Melrose. Rodders is letting it run to the wicketkeeper, and I'm going to give Zarab another chance because that's what I do. I give horses chances, and I just go back to that. Even that run at Newbury earlier on the season when he was second to Snow Lantern, second to La Barossa on his debut, I just don't think we've seen the best of him yet. So I'm going to give Zarab another chance in the 150. Moving on to the 225. It is the 2 mile Bahrain Turf Series handicap. And the best price at the moment about Z-Band is 5-2 for Andrea Azzeni and Roger Varian. Rodrigo Diaz is 5-1, 8-1 Margaret Dumont. It is 70-2 withhold, and it is 10-1 Scaramanga. Keith, we'll kick off with you here.
Yeah, this race, it's a little bit a case of how do you eat yours to an extent, because I look at this race and it's actually maybe not as competitive as you might think at first glance, because I do know a lot of these horses quite well, and there's a few that I'm not terribly keen on in this race. And the more I look at it, the more I think, well, 5-2 is absolutely perfectly fair about Z-Band. I'm maybe looking at it, price him up at around about the 5-2 to 2-1 mark myself. I think this is a really progressive horse. The finishing speed he showed at Newcastle to beat Margaret Dumont, who I think it runs here and I think might be an all-weather horse potentially. That finishing speed, the fact he could put 2.5 lengths into the field, finishing that quickly, shows that he's as good a horse as a lot of people have suspected he might be. He's gone up 8 for it, absolutely deserves to. And I think for that reason, I couldn't put anybody off putting him up at 5-2. And I'll be making sure he's on my side. For people that want a slightly bigger price, I am going to give Sleeping Lion one more chance to confirm his Kempton run on that debut for the Yards. Beat Pastillo, pair miles clear again, and his only run since was at Royal Ascot on the Copper Horse Handicap, and basically had no chance of running well from where he was. He's not been long with Roger Charlton. Maybe that form with Pastillo isn't as good as it looked at the time, but in a race like this, where there's a lot in here that I think I maybe couldn't quite fancy on the day, he's about 14-1 at the moment, and I think it's worth giving him that one more chance. So Sleeping Lion is the bet for those that like something a bit fancier, but do have Z-Band running for you, I think, as well, because if there's a really good horse in this race, it is unquestionably Z-Band.
Yeah, I'd be letting Sleeping Lion sleep now myself. I think, I don't know if he's that well handicapped, but he's 14-1, so there is a little bit of value there. And I completely agree with you with Z-Band. I think if there weren't 13 runners in this, if there was 7 or 8, I think he'd be about 13-8. I think 5-2 is more than fair. Are you going to make it a hat-trick for Z-Band, Rodders?
I think that Z-Band is the most likely winner here, DJ, but there are quite a few horses in it who it wouldn't surprise me if they just popped up on one, the likes of what Withhold, Just Hubert, Indianapolis, Mildenberger. I think they've all got a decent staying handicap in them at some point this year. Again, it's not really one of my stronger selections. I think that Z-Band's the most likely winner, but I'm not 100% sure I want to be backing him at 5-2. So I'll probably leave this one as well.
Oh my God, you've changed. You've changed since we saw you last, Rodders. I hope you're building up to something. You're going to start swinging for 6 soon, are you?
Well, as I say, I'm off to Newmarket, so I've got some good bets there, hopefully. So, stay tuned.
Yeah, that's the good thing. We're keeping viewers and listeners intrigued because they want to know what you're keen on later on in the day. But moving on to the 3 o'clock at Newbury, it is the Hackwood Stakes. It's a Group 3. It's live on ITV. And Kings Lynn, the reformed Kings Lynn, currently rated 109, is 11-4 favourite. Joint favourite, should I say, with Tab Deed. These are the best prices available. Diligent Harry is 130. Happy Romance, 9-1. It is 12-1 Method, 12-1 Royal Commando, and it is also 12-1 Royal Crusade. There are only 7 runners here, Graham Rodway, but if you are good enough at your job, you could actually make a decent case for all 7.
You can always make a case for Kings Lynn, DJ. I mean, is he the most unlucky horse in training, or is he just one of those horses who always flatters to deceive? We're going to find out, aren't we, here? Because he's got a golden opportunity if he can reproduce his King Stand form. That's the best form on offer, RPR of 116. And let's not forget that he would have finished a lot closer had he not found all the trouble in the world going. And then, of course, he found trouble in running just, I think, 4 days later in the Wokingham at Ascot when he finished 3rd. So Oshie Murphy will be trying to put his nose in front of the line, but he's not the sort of horse you want to back at short price, I don't think. He's only won 2 of his 10 starts, finished 2nd 4 times, 3rd 2 more. He's that sort of horse. He's a bit of a thief. We're going to find out. I think there's a good bet here. Happy Romance for Richard Hannon. I was very impressed with the way she won at my local track, Chelmsford. She absolutely hacked up there in April.
Unbelievable performance.
Yeah, it was an amazing performance. All right, she only won by a neck, but when I say hacked up, I mean she could not hardly have done anything else worse at that track. I mean, she made a mess of the start, was at the back in all sorts of trouble. You don't win at Chelmsford from that sort of position and then got up near the line. I mean, would have won by a mile had she got a clean run. Now, bits and pieces of excuses since heavy ground at Ascot when she was beaten, but did bounce back to form at Sandown last time, of course, over five furlongs in the charge. I always get those two mixed up. In the charge, where I thought she was going to try and bounce out and make all. I thought they were going to be nice and positive with her drop back to five furlongs, and they dropped her right out in last, and I thought, oh, that's a bit of a problem. And she ran a bit like how I thought she was going to once they dropped her out in last. She was never quite getting there. She rattled home, finished a half length behind, came from the dark, the winner. Now, I think this step back up to six furlongs will really suit Happy Romance. Obviously, she won at the course. She won the Super Sprint last season, I think, for the yard. So this is her track. I think she's a massive player here, Happy Romance.
Oh, okay. Happy Romance at a nice price for Graham Rodway. Now, Keith Melrose. Three of the last five winners at this race have been five-year-olds. So that makes it very straightforward, doesn't it?
No. Absolutely.
There's actually no five-year-old in the race, would you believe?
Is there not? Well, it's not the sort of thing I look at. One of my great pet hates is the idea that the Hackwood Stakes magically imbued with this thing that favours five-year-olds.
out there, but it didn't really work. It worked out a lot better in my head than it worked out there, to be honest.
No, apologies, DJ. I'm just obviously not on the same wavelength as you comedically.
Fortunately for you. Well, what wins the Hackwood?
I've got an even fancier price than Rodders, to be quite honest. For the second week in a row, you're very kind to mention Tilsit at the top of the show. There's a Charlie Hills horse whose price I just can't quite fathom, and it's Royal Commando. You've just got to take it that this is an improved horse this year. And Hills does that with horses, especially these sort of quite well bred ones that he gets. And Royal Commando does look like a definitely an improved horse this year. On his reappearance in the Camage Trophy, he won that race. And you look at what he's beaten there. Emiratiana and Summer Gand were second and fourth. They had an Oxted sandwich next time in the Abernant Stakes. Third was Brando, who's, you know, he's not what he was, but he's built on that since to show that he retains at least the level of ability he's shown that day. So there's nothing wrong with the form. And the only other horse that was within seven lengths was Chief of Chiefs, who got placed in the Wokingham another week or at Royal Ascot. So there's nothing wrong with that form. And then in the Diamond Jubilee, he finished ninth. He finished quite well down the field, but he travelled really quite well if you watch the replay back, and just hung everywhere when he came off the bridle. Something was awry. You could maybe put the pieces together and say it was the ground, because he has been pulled out on soft ground a couple of times in the past. So maybe this return to slightly better ground is going to make sure, let him confirm the impression that he left when he won the Camage Trophy. And on form, that puts him right up there with the likes of Kings Lynn, who obviously has only been able to show the bare form and no better than that. But yeah, he's out with the rags of the field, and he absolutely shouldn't be. Tab Deeb is a horse I put up last time, but part of the angle was he wants to be fresh. He's not fresh anymore. And Diligent Harry's very short and still needs to find that improvement, even though he's a candidate to do so. So I just thought Royal Commando's price was totally wrong.
Excellent. So we've got two fancy prices for the Hackwood at Newbury. Good stuff, boys. Moving on to the 340, and it is the feature race of the day in Britain. It is the Wetherby's Super Sprint. Loads of prize money up for grabs here, and Chabottle is currently your 2-1 favourite. 9-4 Vintage Clarets, 11-2 Gubas, it is 10-1 Delmona, 16-1 Gilded, and it is 20-1 Barrett. Now, Keith Melrose, you did a whole column on the Super Sprint, so there's only one place to start off. Give us your theory and then give us the winner.
Yeah, so I looked into the Super Sprint this week. I was trying to sort of showcase that percentage of rivals beaten metric, because I think it's most useful in big field races. And obviously the Super Sprint is 25 runners almost every year. It's 22 is a small field historically for this race, what we've got this year. And it showed that when they changed the conditions of the race in 2017, I'm not going to go into the masses of detail, but basically when they changed the conditions, it looked like it took the suitability away from horses off lower weights. And the evidence is pointing towards that being the case. What was a bias in favour for lightly weighted horses has completely flipped in the last 4 years. So you don't want to be looking down the bottom of the weights in the way that you would have been 5-10 years ago in this race. But also what it showed was that even though if you look at the winner's draw, you would think you want to be middle to high, in terms of the rival's beaten measure, you actually want to be middle or, if anything, low, but not right on the wing. Now, not on the wing is part of the reason I can't put up Chipotle or Vintage Clarets here, even though on form they've got so much in hand. They're drawn in 20 and 22. That's right on the wing on that near side. It's going to be probably quite tough for them. And it led me towards Gabas, who's drawn in 15. That's pretty much, well, it'd be in the middle normally. It's a little bit towards high this year. He's not been seen since he won at Leicester quite early in April as well, when he went off 15-8 favourite. But there's a little bit of an element there of he's a Richard Hannon horse. And, you know, Hannon has got a real history with this race. Or certainly the stable has. If you go, you might be going back to his dad in a lot of cases, but certainly the Hannon yard has got that good record here. He was 15-8 favourite. He absolutely lagged up. He did it hands and heels under Sean Levy, and we haven't seen the runner-up to the nine since either. But the only other horse that was within nine lengths of them, beaten five lengths, was Angel Blue, who's since gone on to record RPRs in the 90s a couple of times. So there's a little bit of evidence that was quite a good race. Gabas, as I say, absolutely won nice and easy. And yeah, it comes here. It could just be a very good horse. You know, the reason that Vintage Clarets and Chipotle are so far clear is because they've been given the opportunity to show that they are that good. I just think Gabas lacks only for the opportunity. I think he is probably a good horse, and he's better drawn, and he's three times the price.
That's why you're the betting editor, Keith Melrose. He nails it. Gabas, I have three horses in my tracker, and I'll divulge the other two when they run. But Gabas has been in that tracker since the 9th of April. Now, it was obviously very early in the season, but I was blown away by what this horse did at Leicester that day. As you say, it's very hard to know what to make of the form. Angel Blue won next time at Salisbury and then followed up again. But I just thought it was a length and three quarters. It could have been three and three quarter lengths. It was hands and heels from Sean Levy. To me, it was a performance of a proper, at least Group 2 juvenile, I thought. It's interesting. He's been entered plenty of places. He was entered at Epsom. He was entered at Chester. He was entered loads of places. Now, I don't know if there's been a few setbacks, but it wouldn't surprise me if in the back of Richard Hannon's mind was the Super Sprint, this terrific prize money on offer. Let's keep him for this.
Now, just to come in there, since you've been talking there, did you have looked up Gabas? Because we obviously get all the promotional emails through about these things, and I just typed his name in. He was an intended runner in the Coventry or the Norfolk. That was as of the 11th of June. So he must have had quite a late setback for Royal Ascot. So that tells you a little bit of his own story to an extent. You know, he was obviously a horse they thought they could just win once with and go straight to Royal Ascot with him. There clearly have been some little niggles, but again, the Hannons are running him in the Super Sprint. There's an element of the deliberation about that, isn't there, because of that, the history that that yard has with this race.
Yeah, this is a good horse. I'm convinced of it. I hope he's able to show what he's made of. Now, I know it's only one piece of evidence, but I think it's a vital piece of evidence. I'm with you. I'm a Gabas fan. Grodders, this is a race now. I'm fully expecting you to come up with one here at like 66-1 and make an incredible case for it that we get so confused halfway through that we don't know what you're talking about, but it ends up running an absolute blinder. Is this one of those scenarios?
I hope so, DJ. we shall see. I hate to pour cold water on your Gabas argument, but you know, record of once race horses in this race is not very good at all. Only one once race horse has won it this century. Anyone know?
Piggy Wiggy, no.
No. Temple Meads in 2010. So there's been one once racehorse winner from 31 who tried this century. And Temple Meads went on the course to land the Group 2 Mill Reef later in the season. That's not to say, of course, Gabas can't win, but it does tell you that he's going to have to be borderline Group 2, Group 1 class to win this on only his second start. It is usually a race where experience comes to the fore.
I want at least an impact value before you start throwing around things like that. Come on.
You'll have to wait for that. You'll have to wait for that. Anyway, yeah, I do think I've found one here, DJ, and I really do fancy one at a decent price. It's not 66-1, but I do think I've found one. Sienna Bonnie. trained by Johnny Portman and ridden by Holly Doyle, drawn in stall 13. So not a bad draw on Keith's stats. And what has caught my eye about this whole Sienna Bonnie is that Johnny Portman won this race in 2016 with Mrs. Danvers. Now, Sienna Bonnie finished fifth at Epsom behind Oscula in the Woodcut Stakes. Now, straight after that race, Johnny Portman sent Sienna Bonnie to Windsor to contest a 5 furlong Phillies Conditions race, and she went off quite a short price favourite. Now, he won that race with Mrs. Danvers in 2016 before she came on and won here. Now, Sienna Bonnie didn't win, but she ran very, very well. She led most of the way and was only collared near the line, beating a couple of heads and a neck in fourth. I think that he's taking exactly the same route that he took with his 2016 winner, Mrs. Danvers, with Sienna Bonnie here. And I think that she's going to run a massive race at a good price, DJ. So Sienna Bonnie for me each way.
Well, not to pour cold water over your selection, Graham, but more to pour freezing hot or freezing cold water with loads of ice in it. She's rated 79.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I have written a whole piece in the Post today about how the best horse usually wins and the highest rated horses usually wins. But we can all see that Chipotle and Vintage Claret's got huge chances, can't we? You don't need me to sit here and tell you that. What you want from me is a nice, good price one like Sienna Bonnie.
And you've done just that. So Sienna Bonnie for Graham Rodway as big as 20-1, and this could be a Rodway special. Myself and Keith are playing a little bit safer with Gubbas. So that's the action at Newbury. Join us again after the break, where we'll be previewing Market Raising and the Curragh.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Welcome back to the Racing Post Weekend Tipping Podcast with David Jennings, Graham Rodway and Keith Melrose. And it might be scorching hot temperatures in the middle of July, but we're off jumping to Market Raising. And we've got two cracking jumps races to preview here. The first of those is at 2:05. It's the Betway Summer Handicap Hurdle. And this is competitive at the moment. Hooper is your 5-1 favourite. Camprond is also 5-1, 7-1 Wicked West, 7-1 Valentino Dancer, 15-2 Hang In There, 8-1 Voice of Cam, and 12-1 Bar. Right, Rodders, take it away.
What's a tough race this is, DJ. So we're all in flat mode, and then they throw at you like a mini Greatwood Hurdle, isn't it? You've got like horses like Hooper, who's coming in off a bunch of wins and could be like a lively champion hurdle outsider. Who knows how far he could go for Nicky Anderson?
It's like when you go for a night out with your mates and you're sipping away on pints all night, and then one of your mates comes over and goes, right, there's a shot of tequila, drink that.
It is, yeah. It's just going to be a shock to the system, isn't it, to see them go around here in the summer handicap hurdle. But we can try and find the winner, can't we? It's quite interesting about this race is you've got a few top trainers trying to utilise some claims. Obviously, Nicky Anderson using Ben French Davis, who's ridden Hooper on his last three starts, claims £7. Then we've got Emma Lavelle using Joe Anderson, who claims £10. Now, I'm sure he was with Nicky Henderson for a little while, but if he's able to claim 10, maybe he's off at Emma Lavelle's. But anyway, Hang In There is my selection for Joe Anderson and Emma Lavelle, and Tim Sider and Andrew Gemmell, of course. So I was at Cheltenham when this won there a couple of years ago on the Sunday of the the whatever they call it now, Gold Cup, the November one. I thought that he looked quite a nice prospect. It's not all gone to plan for him since, but he does appear to be getting his act back together now. He's always liked decent ground hanging there. He'll be carrying top weight, but he won't be once Joe takes his £10 off. And I think that he might be getting his act together now. So a cautious selection, Hang In There.
Yeah, I was there that day. He won the Supreme Trial. I thought that was a really good performance, but it turns out, I'm just looking now, he beat Pacify, Echo, Eden the Who and Scardura. So possibly not the best grade two ever on a Cheltenham, but Hang In There is now decently handicapped off a mark of 135. I actually like the other Emma Lavelle runner. I was pretty impressed by Voice of Cam last time. Tom Bellamy rides, and 8-1 I think is fair enough for an improving young horse. Keith, what do you like in the summer hurdle?
Well, as Rodo said, it's an extremely difficult race. And to be honest, I'm probably not going to put one up as an outright tip. Rodo's talked about the jockeys claiming here. I just wanted to put in a word for Matthew Ennis, who's riding on over jumps for the first time in a while on Ingleby Hollow. He's actually just wanted to bring him to people's attention because he's starting to get booked like he's a top amateur on the flat. And I know a lot of people bet in amateur races a lot more based on the jockeys. Matthew Ennis is getting put up in a lot of the good ones now. It was when I saw him riding over hurdles again, I thought, oh, that's unusual. O'Mara's obviously gone to certain efforts to get him riding Ingleby Hollow. And the reason for that mostly is Ingleby Hollow shouldn't be able to win or shouldn't be able to win a stable match bet off these weights because he's a stone worse horse than Stunific, but he's carrying more on the flat, but he's carrying the same weight here over hurdles. Stunific, it's so competitive, I can't actually put him up as a tip, but he might win a hurdles race this summer. I think he's been in good form on the flat. I like his defeat of Contrabass. We might be hearing about Contrabass later on. And the run at Ayr next time didn't go his way at all. Didn't run great at Catterick next time, but maybe as a horse that wants that sort of quicker ground, because he's a decent flat horse, he's 84 RPR. There's not to be sniffed at, you know, and if Tom Skew can keep him there till the second last, not many are going to finish much faster than him, but this isn't really a tip. I'm going to be having no more than a FOMO bet on this horse if I do at all. But it's just to mention that sometime in the summer, if they do persevere over hurdles, I think Stunific will pick up a race.
FOMO bet. I love that. I've had plenty of those over the years, let me tell you. Moving on to the 240, it's the Betway Summer Plate. And heading the market here at around about 9-2 is Captain Tomcat, who jumps like Denman, Arkell, Sprinter Sacra rolled into one. What a jumper this horse is. Solomon Gray is next at 13-2. Darling Matrix is 7-1. 10-1, Frankie de Berlay. 10-1, Fire Away, who brought off that big gamble earlier on in the season. Lord Brian is 10-1. And it is 12-1 bar Rodders. This Captain Tomcat, I could watch him jumping every day of the week.
I've not actually seen him jump yet. Does he jump fences, does he?
Instead of like a takeaway and a bottle of wine and chatting to your missus, like, go and watch Captain Tomcat jumping. It is glorious.
If this all falls tomorrow, DJ, then I'm going to send Richard Newland round to your house. He's quite a decent hurdler, wasn't he? But I must confess to saying that I haven't had a chance to see any of his three chase wins. They've obviously all come this summer. But he's rapidly progressive, isn't he? I like one who's a bit more of an exposed type, and that is Top of the Cotswolds for Nigel Twist and Davis. He's got some really good form to his name, but what strikes me the most is it has come at this track, and I think this is obviously quite a sharp ish sort of test, isn't it? And I think that he'd be well suited by a decent field chase around this course. And he's been coming back to form slowly. Now, forget last time out of Utoxa, because he ran over 3 mile 2 furlongs. Well, for a start, I think that's too far. But he belted every single fence on the whole way around for no apparent reason at all. He doesn't jump like Captain Tomcat, DJ, I can tell you. But the previous run, when he finished 5th behind Frankie de Berlay, he was under Jordan Naylor, who's back on ball taking over from Sam Twist and Davis. So I'm hoping that maybe Jordan Naylor's going to find the key to him here. He likes really quick ground the course, and the drop back in distance will suit him. So at a price, it's Top of the Cotswolds each way for me.
Top of the Cotswolds. Excellent. I hope, Keith, you're going to let just sense prevail here and you're just going to tip up Captain Tomcat.
No, I'm not. He jumps brilliantly. He absolutely does. But the first one is at Aintree, and the other two have been at Worcester. Now, I have this debate very occasionally with me and my really cool friends down the pub. We talk about the easiest jumping test in the country. And I always put up Worcester as the easiest. So I would bear that in mind for anybody that gets really excited about his jumping. But I do admit that he has jumped well around Aintree well, and that's about as stiff as it gets, really, in terms of fences. So, yeah, no, he's a respected horse. He's never seen a rival in any of his three starts. I think that's part of the problem. You know, he's going to see a rival here. This is a summer plate, not a small field race, summer race anymore. You know, he's facing entirely different circumstances, which, you know, it's nitpicking, but I'm going to do that when a horse is 9-2. He pitched straight into this sort of company on just his third start, or fourth start over fences. He wouldn't be qualified if it was his third. You know, he's very unexposed in that regard. Richard Newland trains Captain Tomcat, and I was seeing this earlier today. I just think Laura Morgan is Richard Newland earlier in the curve. Newland improved a lot of horses from other stables, and that's how he made his name. Morgan is doing that already. I can't believe people haven't caught. She should be a cause celebre by now, Morgan.
I completely agree.
People should have cottoned on by now, and I'm surprised they haven't. Fireaway is probably still best known for his involvement in that also near gamble at Musselburn Subtle, but he's just kept improving since. And that win at Cartmel, I mean, it was all right for a summer race. In fact, it was pretty good for a summer race. And he didn't come off the bridle until 100 yards out. He was miles the best of them. The only time he's been beaten in a handicap chase since he joined Morgan was when he finished second to Morning Vicar at Perth. And Morning Vicar's a proper racehorse. It's a winter horse. It's, you know, he's up against summer horses here. He's so progressive. And if you swap the stables, I can guarantee you would just about swap the prices. But I don't think there's that difference between Newland and Morgan that the market's making out. Fireaway is far too big a price at 11-1.
Excellent. Yeah, I can certainly see your case there, but I'm just a Captain Tomcat fan. So hopefully he puts in a splendid round of jumping and makes the four timer, moving across the water to the Curra. And it is of course Irish Oaks Day, and a 250 before that. We have a sprint, and this is a proper sprint. It's the Paddy Power Sapphire Stakes over 5 furlongs, and the highest rated sprinter in Ireland, Logo Hunter, is currently our 5-4 favourite. Measure of Magic is 3-1, Romantic Proposal 5-1, Gustavus Weston 8-1, Make a Challenge 8-1, Munius at 10-1. What a race, boys. This is a proper race. Rodders, are you a Logo Hunter fan?
Is he any good? What do you think?
You've heard of him, haven't you? You have, yeah.
I can't say that I would have named him as, what did you call him? The best sprinter in Ireland.
Highest rated sprinter in Ireland, Graham.
Is he really?
He is. A mark of 113. He's currently 5-4 favourite.
You won't be surprised to hear that the highest rated sprinter in Ireland has happened to win a listed race on soft ground, where they get really spaced out, and especially in sprints where the pound per length's massive.
Don't be crapping our top sprinter here.
I'm just wondering what it tells you about Logo Hunter and what it tells you about the general quality of Irish sprinters. Anyway, let's park that debate for a minute and go on to what I think we'll win. And it's not Logo Hunter. It's Gustavus Weston. Great name for a horse. Last time out, Curra won a Group 2, made a very, very good impression, I thought. Kept on nicely to win that race. Beat Make a Challenge. He's also in this race, unsurprisingly, because they all kind of take each other on, don't they, these horses?
They run against each other about 10 times a year.
They do. Just depends whose day it is. And I just felt that he is he's at the peak of his powers right now. I mean, let's be honest, yeah, he was beaten 6 miles behind Logo Hunter that on his previous start, Nace. But that was over 5 furlongs. He ran 93 RPR. So he's put £20 on that in one run. Now, you either think that's a fluke or you take it as gospel. And at the price, considering that he's like 9-10-1, I'm happy to take a chance that that's right.
Okay, that's fair enough. Gustavus Weston for Graham Rodway. Now, Keith, you're a Logo Hunter fan, aren't you?
Oh, he possibly wins this race. He's got that form behind him. To be honest, DJ, you know, you see these horses race against each other 10 times a year. I probably see 2 or 3 of those Irish sprints. Well, sprints in Ireland are two things that I don't spend an awful lot of my time on watching. So this is not my sort of area of interest or area of expertise at all. So I won't be putting up anything in races. I won't insult everyone's intelligence by trying to put up a horse in these Irish sprints. But no, it's not my sort of thing at all.
That's fine. I hope you won't be insulting everybody's intelligence by tipping up something other than Snowfall in the Judmont Irish Oaks. Is at 3.25 with the Curra. There is some 2-7 available, generally a 1-4 shot, the shortest price in the history of the race, Snowfall. The history maker from Epsom won the Kazoo Oaks by 16 lengths. Next in the betting is Nicest for Aidan's son, Dunica at 8-1. Then it's Divinely at 11-1, 14-1 Willow. It is 33-1 Ladja Khan. It is Mariesca is next at 33-1. And Party House is also 33-1. And the outsider of the field is the Maiden Handful of Summers. Will we keep this snappy, boys? Keith Snowfall, will she win? By how far? And who will finish second?
She'll win. She possibly won't win by as far as people are expecting.
Possibly won't win by 16 lengths.
No, I don't think she definitely won't win by 16 lengths. I mean, I've written today that obviously that is, you know, she's good. She's probably not record-breaking classic winner good. You know, there was a big bias towards the rail that day. She got a much better ride than most. And yeah, she might never run to that figure again, but she'll probably win this. I still think there's a group race this year in Divinely and might be backing her to finish second. But with the dead eight, you're probably just as well to go each way with her. I think she's got a better performance in her. She's still got, you know, she's got £20 to find on Snowfall, but I think that everything's, you know, she was third, probably shaped second best in the Oaks. And then again, I don't think the Ribbles did exactly went her way, but there's still improvement to come. She's probably not going to beat Snowfall, but I can definitely see her in the three. So each waste or slash place only on Divinely would be the way I'd play this race.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout. Rodders, what's your expectations of Snowfall here?
Gets beat, DJ.
Rodders, will you stop with the nonsense?
Gets beat, definitely.
Are you serious here now?
I was just about to label her as the lay of the century, but then I remembered my last lay of the last century hacked up by 20 odd lengths and thought, let's just say she gets beat. Let's just take it, take it down a notch a little bit.
Tell us why, I suppose.
She cannot possibly be as good as she looked at.
She doesn't need to be. Epsom.
She can't possibly be that good, DJ. I mean, what was that, 16 lengths? I mean, she was the only one who went on the ground, surely. Everything else just...
Yeah, but even if she won by a length, would she not win this?
Would she be 3-10?
No. Well, give us your reasoning here.
Now, price, of course, dictates everything. And at, 2-7, 3-10? Because she won the Oaks by 16 lengths in a performance absolutely is definitely not right. I mean, that performance is definitely not to be believed. For just forget that run. Just forget that run is even on the ledger. And then just judge her on her previous run at York when she recorded an RPR of 109. Now, I know that still puts a £7 clear. But that doesn't make her... a 2-7, 3-10 shot. It makes her probably a lot bigger price than that. And purely on value grounds, I think she has to be taken on that alone. And there's any number of good horses running against her, I think. I think there's. I think there is. I think that Nicest is very good. I mean, she ran a very eye-catching race in the at Ascot. Very eye-catching. Travelled beautifully through the race. Kept on nicely. Finished third behind Loving Dream. She, to me, looks like a horse who's got an awful lot more to offer Nicest. I think that she is going to blossom as the season goes on. Keith's already mentioned Divinely. Willow won nicely last time out in the ace, albeit, yes, a listed race. She was 40 lengths behind at Snowfall Epsom, but as I've already said, I'm ignoring that run. It can't possibly be right. And then even I can make a case for Party House, a big price, DJ. I think that she'll improve for the step back up in trip. She was well beaten behind Willow last time, but I think that she's got a good chance of causing an upset. I can see at least 3 or 4 good dangers against Snowfall. And she is far too short at 2-7. I'm definitely going to be laying her. I'll be backing Nicest against her. Take her on. Just be brave and take her on.
I do like how 5 minutes ago I said I won't insult anybody's intelligence, and Giro's just gone to fool 12 angry men about how Snowfall's going to get beat.
Well, I have to say, one of the things, like, it's been an extraordinary year, really, and, you know, there's been very unusual things happening, but it's kind of reassuring to know that Graham Rodway can still amaze you in life, I have to say. So, Graham, I thoroughly enjoyed those last couple of minutes. It's a load of nonsense, but I have to say I did really enjoy them. So, what else on Saturday, boys? Don't reveal your naps. Rodders, give us a few tips that we haven't covered on Saturday.
Yeah, very, very much looking forward to going to Newmarket, DJ, for the first time in over a couple of years now. Obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of the picnic enclosure there. The Punch and Judy show is absolutely a star, so I'm looking forward to that. But in the meantime, I look forward to having a few winners as well, hopefully. And in the opener, the 140 at Newmarket, Rouge A Noir looks like a really good bet for Charlie Fellows. Very eye-catching run, first time out at Lingfield, in a 7-furlong novice or maiden. I'm never quite sure now what they are, you know, because they have some maidens and some novices. But yeah, it was one of them anyway. I think that'll win the first Rouge A Noir. The 330 is a listed race. It's a very poor, weak listed race. The Aphrodite Stakes used to be on TV, but they've obviously ditched it. Hugo Palmer runs Golden Pass, who I thought was very impressive when she beat Throne Hall at first, a couple of starts ago in handicap company. Took the step up to listed company well last time out. Second behind a useful horse of Sir Michael Stout's called Katara. I think that, what's that horse called? Golden Pass, yeah, in the 3:30 at Newmarket. That could win that race. And in the 4:05 at Newmarket, the staying race, Dreamweaver just keeps coming up on all kinds of different systems that I'm running, so I have to tip him. He was well beaten behind Z-Ban last time out, 7 lengths in that race at the Northumberland Vase, not the plate. But he's got a few eye-catching runs behind him. He's beaten and necked by Brasker at Salisbury, who's a short price. Again, at Chester 2 runs ago, not a lot went right for him. I think the long straight here might just play to his strengths. So that's Dreamweaver in the 4:05 at Newmarket. So that's Newmarket covered for you.
Lovely. So, well, enjoy your day and enjoy the Punch and Judy show, Graham. That will be very interesting, I'd imagine. Keith Melrose.
That's the way to do it.
Yes. Keith Melrose, anything else for us on Saturday that's not your nap?
Yeah, I can't believe Rouge et Noir. I thought it can't be 15 years since that horse was circling the gaff tracks in the north for Keith Reevely, and it is. I don't know if any of you guys will remember Rouge et Noir. But he was a moderate handicapper for Keith Reevely. Yeah. And I thought, God, it can't be that long since he was running, but it is. Dear me. Anyway, no, I do have a I've actually taken on orders a little bit. We talked about the 4:05 this morning, and we had a bit of a disagreement. And he moved me closer to Dreamweaver, to be quite honest with you. The horse is bred to maybe improve for the longer trips in time, but I still can't quite get away from Prince Imperial. I don't think it's much of a race, in all truth. Autumn War is unlikely to run. I would have thought he's probably going to run today, Friday. Smart Champion, I think, probably wants a longer trip and is winding up to the 2.5 mile race at Glorious Goodwood. So Prince Imperial, I don't know what it was that made the difference at Chelmsford. All I know is that that sort of performance has been coming for a very long time. And if he can repeat that, I think he'll win. He's gone up £7, and I think Richard Hughes might have thought that's a bit stiff because he's got Ray Dawson on to claim three. Ray Dawson doesn't need £3. He's a fully fledged jockey in all but name. That's a free allowance for him, so he's only racing off £4 higher. He won by 6 lengths last time. He is a good horse. He is that good. I just don't know what the ingredients are for him to repeat it, but if he does, probably wins.
Lovely stuff. Now it's time for the naps.
This will not be beaten.
Graham Radway.
Mine is...
This already sounds utterly convincing.
I was going to say Lay Snowfall, and then I thought, well, it's not really a nap, is it? Yeah, so I'll say Happy Romance.
Well, luckily for you, you've just gone off a loser and has some sort of a chance. So
Happy Romance. Yeah. 3 o'clock at Newbury.
Is very sweet on Happy Romance in the 3 o'clock at Newbury. I'm going to get in there before Keith. My nap is in the 3:40 at Newbury, the Weatherby Super Sprint, and it is Gubbass. Did I steal your thunder, Keith?
No, I mean, I do like Gubbass. He wouldn't be my very strongest bet on the day. It's weird, actually. You know, it's going to be the hottest weekend of the year, and here I am reverting to Chasers, which is my winter pursuit, really. 2:40 at Market Raising, Summer Plate, that fire away price is wrong.
Fire away. So there you go. Fire away, Happy Romance, and Gubbass. That is your Trixie for Saturday. We're nearly done, boys. We're just going to have a quick look at Sunday. There's some decent action at the Curragh, and we've also got a couple of meetings in Britain. Tipperary's also in Ireland. We've got Stratford, we've got Newton Abbott, we've got Redcar, and we've got French accent as Sean T. But anything for Sunday, lads?
Yeah, me and Rodders are going to discuss the 5:10 at Redcar after this. And I mentioned 12 Angry Men earlier. I'm going to be going full 12 Angry Men to get Contrabass top, I think. He's been in good form generally. He was second by a short at the Stenific, as we discussed when we were doing Market Raising. He's had a second to Let Me Be, who's just been winning for fun this year on his recent profile as well. And at York last time, The race at Gubernator won last weekend at York. They didn't actually go that slow in that race, but I think David Allen must have thought they did because he kicked on at the top of the straight. And I think that got shown to be a bit overzealous. He got tired and finished back in sixth, but he shaped a lot better than the result there. He runs in a much weaker race for me at Redcar here. And, you know, I'm always reluctant with these Sunday ones before I see prices, because if he's 15 to 8, I might not back him myself, but I think this horse has got an outstanding chance and maybe deserves to be a narrow favourite.
Okay, well made. Rodders, have you got anything for us on Sunday?
I don't have too much for you, DJ. It's interesting that Create Belief is running, isn't it, in the 3:55 at Curra. How that won that race at Royal Ascot by so far, it was just insane, wasn't it? But yeah, you're probably the right man to take us through to Curra on Sunday, aren't you?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Obviously, there's an interesting card at the Curra, but for my only selection on the day, I'm going to go to the 4:05 at Tipperary, and it is Letector. Tony Martin has had a difficult year, but he's back among the winners at Leopardstown on Thursday night. He won the final race there. And this Letector, he just has to be well handicapped off 116. Like, he started favourite for a competitive handicap chase at Leopardstown. It's Christmas Festival when we last saw him. Disappointed there. I just think his horses were out of form at the time. And just seeing Bucktor and Timothy win the other night suggests to me that Tony Martin's horses are coming back into form. And if Letector can't win this, oh, it's time to forget about Letector if he can't win this. I think he's better than these. 2 mile 3 should be perfect. Ground ideal. Letector in the 4:05 at Tipperary. So that's it, folks. That's it for this weekend's Racing Post Weekend Tipping Podcast. I've been David Jennings. He's been Keith Melrose. The guy who told us that Snowfall wouldn't win the Irish Oaks. That was Graham Rodway. So you can, are you on Twitter, Graham?
I gave Twitter up a long time ago, thankfully.
Well, the guy who thinks that Snowfall won't be beaten, his name is, of course, Graham Rodway, and he's always great crack. So that's been this weekend's Tipping Podcast. If you enjoy these shows, please make sure you rate, review, and subscribe wherever you like listening to us. We'll be back next week for more quality action. And until next time, goodbye. And don't forget, if you're having a bet this weekend, gamble responsibly. Only bet what you can afford to lose. Thanks for listening.